When William F. Buckley died on February 27th, the obituaries focused as much on his distinctive verbal style as on his political influence. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg explains why Buckley could get away with using words that would have made anyone else sound insufferably pretentious or buffoonish.
The death of William F. Buckley last month sent the writers of obituaries and appreciations to their dictionaries, searching for Buckleyisms they could drop in by way of homage. The New York Times led the way when it headed its page one obituary, "William F. Buckley, Jr., 82, dies, sesquipedalian spark of right." Not surprisingly, that header mystified quite a few readers, particularly since the article underneath it didn't give the game away until paragraph 24, when it finally let on that sesquipedalian means characterized by the use of long words. Still, if you're going to have people scratching their heads over a word in somebody's obituary, who better than his? I counted more than a dozen of those stories that use the word sesquipedalian, though most weren't as coy as the Times about explaining the word. In Newsweek, Evan Thomas described Buckley as a lover of big words, a sesquipedalian, as he might say. Actually, Buckley did call himself that on occasion, though he knew that you can only use sesquipedalian as an adjective to describe someone. It's not a noun like Episcopalian. But one way or another, the word is particularly apt for him, and not just because of his fondness for polysyllables. It was coined by the Roman poet Horace, who referred to poets who use sesquipedalia verba, which literally means words a foot and a half long. The word was Horace's little joke, an example of the very thing it was ridiculing, and it has been tinged with mockery ever since. So it accords nicely with the slightly self-mocking persona that Buckley fashioned for himself. The slouch, the drawling patrician voice, the arching eyebrows and the darting lizard tongue, not to mention the overcooked language itself, it all served to avert the irritation that his highfalutin vocabulary might otherwise have engendered. We Americans tend to be tough on erudition that's untempered by humor, or at least when it comes from one of our own. Unfairly or not, we'll tax George Will with pedantry for using a word that we'll receive with an indulgent smile when it comes from Christopher Hitchens. Use a fancy word in public, and you risk being accused of affectation, elitism, or simply what people used to call putting on the style. With the exception of Senator Pat Moynihan, I can't think of any modern public figure but Buckley who could charm away those impressions while still getting people to take him and his language seriously. David Fry and Robin Williams could get his voice dead on, but his verbal style proved surprisingly hard to capture, even for those who were close to him. In his appreciation of Buckley, National Review's Jonah Goldberg described him affectionately as the peripatetic proselytizer of polysyllabism. But that doesn't sound like Buckley. What it brings to mind is Spiro Agnew disgorging one of those prefabricated chunks like nattering nabobs of negativism that his speechwriter William Safire used to cook up for him. It's the same sort of thing that Bill O'Reilly is doing when he over-enunciates words like bloviate and opine, a big word buffoonery that actually implies a disdain for language. These are people who choose their words as if they were shopping for lawn ornaments. There are people who do this polysyllabic wordplay more engagingly. Safire, for example, ever since he's been filing under his own byline. But this is just a weekend avocation for Safire, whereas Buckley's devotion to recondite words was profound and passionate, and sometimes maybe a little immoderate. Word collectors always have to tread a fine line between flattering their readers' erudition and basking in their own, and Buckley didn't always keep his balance. He had a weakness for what the critic H.W. Fowler described as Wardour Street words, after the street in Soho where Londoners used to shop for decorative bric-a-brac. He couldn't resist using catechize in place of question or grill, vaticination for forecast, and eo ipso for in and of itself. Of course, he would have said that those words had nuances that were absent in their everyday synonyms, and that using them encouraged people to stretch their vocabularies. He wrote once that asking somebody to avoid uncommon words is like advising a composer that he may not use diminished chords in his next symphony. That's fair enough, but reading Buckley, you sometimes wish that he'd confined his composing to the white keys. Take the time he worked albescent into a description of the sea in an account he wrote for People magazine in 1980 about crossing the Atlantic in a sailboat. It was an elegant touch, particularly for readers whose Latin was up to recognizing that the word meant whitish. But even for them, albescent doesn't conjure up a specific shade of white, the way a concrete word like chalk or frost or ivory does. That's the price you pay for using sesquipedalian words. The higher they soar, the further removed they are from the world of feeling and sensation on the ground below. And as Horace said, you have to set them aside if you want to touch the heart. Buckley had trouble renouncing that language, and the failure came at a cost. His penchant for lexical bling-bling helped make him a cultural personage. But it also left him a lesser writer than his gifts might have allowed him to become. Still, the woods are full of gifted writers, and there was only one of him.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist who teaches at the School of Information at the University of California at Berkeley. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.